The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome back to the program. Thank you so much for joining us. You can follow us, danproffshow.com. That is the website. You also find podcasts there, as you do on Spotify and iTunes, Twitter, at danproff and at danproffshow. Building off our discussion in the last segment with Olivia Perez-Cubis about the Amy Coney Barrett nomination and looming confirmation battle, I referenced the great Walter Williams's recent op-ed on the topic. He writes about judges and the rules of the game, meaning the rules of the game of life in a free society. We need the kind of rules whereby you would be okay even if your worst enemy were in charge. Despite the high stakes of bitterly fought football contests, most games end peaceably, and the winners and losers are civil. It's indeed a miracle of sorts that players with conflicting interests can play a game, agree with the outcome, and walk away as good sports. That miracle is that it is far easier to reach an understanding about the game's rules than the game's outcome. The same conflict-reducing principle should be a part of a civilized society. And I use that excerpt from Walter Williams's latest op-ed, not only in the context of advancing the discussion about Amy Coney Barrett and her originalist perspective on the Constitution, but also on the nature of op-ed pages in general. There's Walter Williams's thoughts are maybe welcome in some journals of conservative thought, probably many fewer academic journals, and probably even fewer journals or outlets where inside the Beltway, where the editorial pages are dominated by the left because they have a business to do, which is not only to serve a small segment of the population for the purposes of revenue, keeping these businesses afloat, which is fine, but also for the purposes of undermining the position that Walter Williams takes about how a civilized society should be ruled. That's not the view of these op-ed pages, and so they will not indulge views that diverge from their own, as we've seen over and over again. For more on that topic, we're pleased to be joined by Roger Rehm, president of the Fund for American Studies. I'm a proud graduate of their Comparative Political and Economic Systems program. It's great, great organization, great programs. And Roger, thanks for joining us. You've recently written an op-ed about op-eds.
Oh, that's right, Dan. Hey, and I'm a big fan of you and your radio programs, and thanks for having me on today.
Yeah, pleasure.
Someone mentioned to me in early September that September 21st, 1970 was supposedly the birthday of the op-ed, and so we were coming up on the 50th anniversary, and I started to think about the fact that now, this is the New York Times that claimed to have founded this idea of an op-ed page where they would have diverse voices, some prominent, some not so prominent, to present a range of views opposite their editorial page. And they started this in 1970. And we've come a long way since then. And, you know, it's been what's these mainstream newspapers. Years, you'll recall that, you know, there used to be a separation between the editorial page and the news. The News and the editorial page would offer their opinion about it. And after, it wasn't that many years ago where suddenly major newspapers would put on the news pages columns that would say analysis, where they drift into opinion and not just presenting the facts. And then there seemed to be news reporters who were unhappy with the editorial policies of their newspapers, and it's been sad to see now where on even the opinion pages, the staffs of major newspapers like the New York Times and others are rebelling against diverse opinions appearing on the op-ed page.
When we come back with Roger Rehm, president of the Fund for American Studies, I want to ask him what he thinks about the future of a handful of conservative columnists who continue to work at not-so-conservative outlets and what that means for the Fourth Estate on a go-forward basis. More with Roger Rehm right after this.
Grab a good seat and sharpen your pencils. Class is in session with Professor Dan Proft and the Dan Proft Show.
Welcome back to the program. We are speaking with Roger Rehm. He's the president of the Fund for American Studies, talking about the history of the op-ed page. It's only 50 years old. And what has become of the op-ed pages at outlets like the New York Times in real time. And I wanted to pick up on that and get your take on what may happen yet still with these outlets. And I think about columnists I mentioned before, like Ross Douthat at the New York Times or my friend John Cass at the Tribune, a handful of conservative columnists who continue to work at not-so-conservative outlets that are increasingly not so tolerant of people who are not leftist. And I wonder what you think about the future, what the future will be for those columnists and what that will mean for those outlets and the Fourth Estate generally.
Well, I think you're raising a very important issue. It would be interesting to ask some of those conservative columnists to what extent they actually practice some self-censorship for fear that if they express an opinion on a certain issue, they might get canceled or lose their contract with that paper. Certainly the trend is going toward, and it comes from, you know, not only like at the Chicago Tribune from the, where I think it came from the guild there, but it comes from readers who seem to object to having exposure to opinions they don't hold. And a free society really rests on open debate, civil discussion of issues, with the truth for, coming to the, hopefully to the fore through this kind of debate. There was a very disturbing interview recently with a Stanford University journalism professor of many years, and he said the purpose of journalism and being a journalist is to be an activist for social justice.
Yeah.
He argued there's no such thing as objectivity, and I worry that the reporters at some of these papers are speaking. They're coming out of the universities where, you know, we saw a long march to the universities by the left, and they aren't as open to the idea of free speech and freedom of expression, and they will come after conservatives, I think, whether they're just the Tom Cottons of the world who publish an opinion once or twice, or whether they're the columnists who we read more regularly in these papers.
Well, what are you seeing at the Fund for American Studies? Because these are college students that have an orientation towards politics or policy or journalism. And as I remember when I attended the Fund for American Studies, across the political spectrum were the college students that attended these programs. And I wonder if you're seeing the same thing among those attendees to the Fund for American Studies programs, or we have some hope there in terms of there is a slice of college student America that sort of gets it, that is really actually committed to searching for the truth, reporting on things that are true, having free marketplaces of ideas on college campuses and op-ed pages.
Well, I think I make two observations. One is I think over time the students coming to our programs are certainly less knowledgeable about some of the important ideas that should have been taught when they were in high school and, and college, you know, about the American founding ideas, about our Constitution, the Federalist Papers, and a good understanding of economics, which is a required course we offer to journalism students and all our students. So that's one issue. And yes, I think in the past maybe 5 or 6 years, we've certainly seen a little less willingness to tolerate dissent and views that they view as out of the mainstream or ideas they would disagree with. So we've been very careful through our orientation program to put a heavy emphasis on the importance of free speech, the importance of everyone having some friends who might hold other opinions than them, who they can civilly converse with, and that you hone your own ideas only through that kind of exchange with other people who disagree with you, if you do it civilly. So, I mean, I think we're still getting a lot of bright students who want to make the world a better place, and we're just trying to channel that energy and ambition into doing it in a way that is effective by using the tools of economics, by understanding the ideas that you just related that Walter Williams mentioned in his op-ed. Walter's a dear friend, and he comes to speak from time to time to our students. And, you know, we need a society based on rules that minimize conflict and get us to work together to our mutual advantage.
Do you see
that's what we attempt to teach?
Yeah. And in the programs for those students that come that are a little less open minded on the topic of disagreement, do you see scales fall from eyes during the course of the program, the 6 week program or so? Because, you know, you wonder, can you reach people, even young people, with reason these days? And so I wonder what the experience is.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I think students really appreciate it. After the end of one of our programs, they will put on the evaluations that they heard ideas they had not been exposed to before on their campus, that they really appreciated that exposure to those ideas. Obviously, not in every case, but in many cases, they came to appreciate important concepts like free trade and the importance of secure property rights in order to have a flourishing civil society. So, yes, I think it really makes an impact on these students when they come to one of our programs and take courses from our professors and hear a lot of interesting speakers that often don't get out to college campuses.
It seems to me this is a classic case of center-right, not to put an ideological label on the Fund for American Studies, but people who believe in the concepts that we were just discussing, building their own castle rather than just trying to beat down the door of somebody else's castle like the Ivy League or most of collegiate America. And you know, this is what Andrew Klavan talks about all the time with respect to Hollywood. Trying to beat down those doors is futile. What conservatives need to do a better job of is building their own castles and sending young people who are talented writers into screenwriting or talented, you have great director's eye into directing and so on and so forth. You need more conservatives in the arts and in entertainment. You need them to go build their own castles, build their own businesses, do their own, provide their own work product. And it seems to me that's the case with respect to the rest of civil and even the civil society and even our political institutions. Conservatives haven't done a good job of building their own castles when it comes to systems of education and systems of cultural import.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, there's only one Hillsdale College, or at least only a handful of schools that really emphasize the kinds of things you'd learn at Hillsdale College. So we've built, in a way, I think, what I would call an alternative university. We're far from having accomplished what we need to, but, you know, we have alternative speakers programs where we send speakers out to campuses. We have programs where students can leave for a semester or summer like they can at the Fund for American Studies and come here and study and earn college credit that they can transfer to their home university. There are lots of ways to try to get around the liberal, progressive hold on higher education in our country. And while we have a long way to go, at least we're making inroads through setting up alternative ways for young people to get exposure to ideas that every educated person should have exposure to.
He is Roger Ream. He's the president of the Fund for American Studies. Roger, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Listen, the more you'll know. This is the Dan Prof Show.